You ever get the feeling that everything in America is completely f***ed up?
They're saying I should think stuff. Something is wrong with me.
Practice. I'm still looking for a good opening catchphrase to start off each episode of Positive Cynicism. If you have any suggestions, please send them to me on Twitter at Chad Spart. Before we get into this edition, this episode of Positive Cynicism, I just want to give a shout out to the Cape Girardeau, Missouri Comic Con, Cape Comic Con. Recently, we were there with the Jittery Monkey brand, myself, Kevin Hunsberger, Greg Mahochko, and Mike Luther from Nerd United. So we had a good weekend. It was fun. Good chance to – I had not been to that Comic-Con before. It lived up to my expectations, I will say that. And it was good to be there with Kevin and Greg and to meet Mike for the first time, to have the whole Jittery Monkey crew there. Also got to meet the guys and girls of Podzilla 1985. So if you're looking for good podcasts, check them out. They do four different shows a week. You can find them by typing in Podzilla 1985. And of course, as again, reminder, all these shows here on Jittery Monkey, Kevin Hunsberger's My 1-2-3 Cents, Greg Mahochko's Five Heart Podcast, and Greg and Mike Luther's Nerds United, where they just recently did an episode about Avengers Endgame, which I have not yet listened to, but I plan to just as soon as I finish this episode. So go give them a listen. You can find us all on Twitter and Facebook, and there's also jitterymonkey.com, where you can find all the shows and our shop, where we have t-shirts and other merchandise things that you probably need in your house or apartment or basement, or, you know, if someone has a birthday coming up, great birthday gifts. So head over to jitterymonkey.com. In addition to finding a good way to start these episodes, I also need to figure out a way to not ramble so much in the opening. So I'm just going to shut up, go into a commercial break, and on the flip side, I'll be back with the Travis Yates. You can find him on Twitter at the Travis Yates. And we will be discussing the culture of reboot and continuations or revivals of old shows and movies. So stay tuned.
Hey everyone, Kevin Hunsberger here from My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast, and My1-2-3cents.com. Every Monday, a new episode drops with the latest news and happenings in the world of professional wrestling. Head to the archives and listen to interviews with legends of the ring like Double J, Jeff Jarrett, Mick Foley, Kamala, and Dan the Beast Severin. Current superstars like Sheamus, Xavier Woods, and Kofi Kingston have been part of the discussion too. Again, it's My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast, a wrestling fan's perspective.
That Joe's in trouble.
No, the Cobras are in trouble. That Joe is Sergeant Slaughter.
Don't mess with Sergeant Slaughter. He's as strong as they come. I'll see him take on 100 Cobras and set them on the run.
Meet Sergeant Slaughter and his Triple T tank.
Sergeant Slaughter is now a part of G.I. Joe.
G.I. Joe.
A real American hero.
Live the adventure of G.I. Joe.
And look out, Cobra.
Sergeant Slaughter comes with Triple T tank, Cobra figures and equipment sold separately.
Okay, welcome again to Positive Cynicism. I said that before the commercial break, but you know, you may have got lost along the way. You may have stepped out to get a bite to eat and forgot what you were listening to. This is Positive Cynicism, and I am joined, as I am at the beginning of every month, by the Travis Yates on Twitter. You can find him at the Travis Yates. And Travis, I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to our musical biopic episode that just came out. It was episode 90, the episode before this one, where Mike DeKalb and I discussed the usage of the word "the" in social media and email.
I'll have to take a listen and see if you roast me or hold me over the coals for adding "the" to the front of my name.
I won't spoil it. You'll just have to listen. But no, it's fine. We were joking because here in California, freeways get the whenever you talk about them. Instead of just saying, oh, I went up 405 or 101, it's the 405, the 101.
Yes.
So
I'm well aware of that from the California, what is it, the Californians on SNL.
Yes.
One of my returning skits on that.
But as we were recording this, the week before recording this was the NFL draft, which I know you take, it's like your second Christmas or maybe your first Christmas. I'm not really sure how you've ranked the two.
But, yeah, don't tell my family, but it's really first Christmas for me.
I know you do a lot of preparation. You make mock drafts and whole reports on this. I did not see the NFL draft because I was at the Cape Girardeau, Missouri Comic Con with the other guys from Jittery Monkey. And even if I would have been home, I probably would not have watched the draft because I don't follow football that intently. But I just want to ask real quick, how did your draft predictions pan out? And who do you think had the best draft this year?
My draft predictions panned out pretty well, actually. So I'm contributing to the a website, profootballnetwork.com. You can find them on Twitter, at PFN365, cheap plug. And I did a few mock drafts for the AFC North, and I actually predicted a few of the Cincinnati Bengals picks correctly, including their quarterback and one of their mid-round running backs down to the sixth round. So pretty accurate there for a mid-round pick. So I'm pretty pleased with myself there in my predictions. And Chad, so many teams. It was really the team, kind of the haves and the have-nots. It was hard to pick just like one team that really nailed it. There's a lot of teams that did really well, and then a lot of teams that really stunk it up. So I'd say more so than who won it, I'd say the New York Giants absolutely just dropped the ball completely and had the worst possible draft they could ever imagine. I feel so bad for Giants fans right now.
Wow. Is it because Eli is still playing for them or just because of the draft picks?
Just because of the draft picks. I mean, it doesn't help that what 45-year-old Eli Manning is still there, but yeah, they just had a terrible draft, and they had two first-round picks that they could have done a lot with, and they didn't, and it was just a hot mess, as they say.
My big question, though, is did Sinbad get drafted? I keep waiting for him. I thought, you know, he and Scott Bakula had that awesome year a few years ago. I keep hoping that he would get drafted at some point.
No Sinbad draft pick this year. We'll have to wait till next year. Maybe they're just waiting for you to watch. And once you watch.
Maybe. Yeah. And Sinbad wasn't even in Shazam, which just, it's a bad year for Sinbad.
Isn't every year a bad year? Sorry, Sinbad.
Well, no, I think 1994 was a good year for Sinbad.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. Okay.
All right. Well, speaking of Sinbad, no segue out of that possible. We are here today to discuss, because I had talked to you via text message about if you had watched the new season 2 of Cobra Kai, which just recently came out on YouTube. And you, like probably 99% of the country, said no, because who actually pays for YouTube?
True.
And I actually, since cutting the cable, I use YouTube TV, cheap plug, not a sponsor. And so I get YouTube, the programming, for free, it's part of the subscription. And I have to tell you that Cobra Kai Season 1 was probably my favorite show of 2018.
I've been told by several people now that I just absolutely have to at least do the free trial and binge it. So that's on my to-do list, is at least take advantage of the free trial. And I'm just waiting till I have, you know, a week. Semester's almost over, so I'll have a little downtime coming up. So this summer, it's on my to-do list. But you're certainly not the first person to tell me just how awesome this is. So I'm really excited about it. I can't wait.
Okay. Well, I don't want to build it up too much then. It's only 10 episodes a season, about 28 minutes per episode, but it is season 2. I like the way they told the story. The last episode's a little over the top, but I'm curious to see. It just got renewed for season 3. I'm curious to see what they do in the next season, but it got me thinking, because we are in this age of reboots and redos and whatnot. So I said, you know, we have this little show where we can talk about things. Let's talk about reboots and what shows we think would make, because in addition to Cobra Kai, you have the Conners, you have Will and Grace being back, Murphy Brown. It seems this new trend is taking old shows that people already know and loved and then just taking them 20, 30 years later and updating and showing us where the characters are today. So I guess we'll start off with these shows. Is this a trend that you are in favor of? Have you watched any of these revivals, or is this something that when you see, you just kind of roll your eyes and move on?
Yeah, I'm excited about some of them and not all of them. And I think that, and it's really going to be a personal preference here of the viewer as far as the iconic show, you know, what is an iconic show to them that shouldn't be touched? You know what I mean? And so there's, it's very subjective. So, you know, some shows that I enjoyed that I liked having come back. I watched Roseanne as a kid and I enjoyed seeing it come back. And, but you know, there's other shows that I think, like when they remade Footloose, for example, years ago, that's just a film you don't remake, in my opinion. You don't need to. It's unnecessary. It's some shows or movies are so classic that you just almost, it's almost disrespectful, in my opinion, as far as trying to recapture anything or bring it back. So, yes, I am excited to some extent. For me personally, it depends on whatever the movie or TV show is, you know, how I feel about it.
Yeah, you mentioned Footloose, and I will say that in Avengers Infinity War, as much as I like Tom Holland and the new Spider-Man character, he did kind of lose me when he admitted that Footloose was never the coolest movie ever. Because the original is just an awesome slice of 80s cinematic genius.
It is. And yeah, shame on him. I haven't seen Endgame yet. And now I feel like I should boycott it just over that statement right there. So I've got some soul searching to do before I make up my mind.
Yeah. And it's funny too, because we were talking Cobra Kai, you know, they remade Karate Kid a few years ago, and Will Smith is actually an executive producer on the Cobra Kai series. And that is a movie that just one didn't need to be remade. And two, I just felt they took all the heart out of the original, and even Jackie Chan just looked bored making it.
Yeah, that was one of those that I usually would just do my own little personal boycott when it's a film like Footloose. I never saw the remake, and I fought for a long time to not ever see the Karate Kid remake, and then finally it was on one day and my son wanted to watch it, and what are you going to do? So I was like, okay, you want to watch this? And it was, yeah, he did look bored. The whole thing was just kind of convoluted. It just felt kind of thrown together for someone's idea to, hey, let's remake this Karate Kid movie. So yeah, that was one, I think, too, that didn't need to be touched.
Right. And as you mentioned, I think when it comes to these shows, I think the other part in the redo or the remake is what type of care or, I guess, the intention behind the remake? Because is it just cashing in on a name brand recognition and getting the audience that way? Or is it something that someone is actually passionate about and wants to do a fitting homage to? And I think both Footloose and Karate Kid, and there's one more that I'm forgetting in there, maybe like the Vacation movie that came out a few years ago, where I feel these were just cash grabs. They were not, the studios just said, hey, we have the rights to these films, let's remake them. Whereas Cobra Kai, I was very surprised that it wasn't taking it and making a mockery of the original Karate Kid. It wasn't being, okay, this is, you know, something from the 80s, let's spoof it, or let's look at it sarcastically, cynically. It's just, no, let's take these two characters. Where would they be, you know, from 1984 to 2018? Where have their lives gone? What would they be doing today if they were real people?
Yeah, I think intent is a big thing as far as, you know, why is it coming back? What's the purpose? Are the original characters coming back? Identifying what type of reboot it is, you know, is it a continuation like you referenced? Are we picking up 20 years later like Roseanne just did? Or are we redoing the whole thing like they've done with Magnum P.I. and MacGyver? It seems like the sitcoms are bigger on continuation, that must just kind of fit better from a storytelling standpoint, while serial dramas seem to prefer just starting over, you know, from scratch, where, you know, I'd watch Tom Selleck come back as Magnum PI right now, but I haven't watched an episode of the new one because I have no interest. So yeah, some intent there as far as, are you continuing or is it a reboot? Is it a remake? You know, what do you think as far as, you know, it's film versus television as well? Is there a difference there that we need to look at? Is there a bigger impact made by a television series, an iconic television series coming back versus an iconic film being remade? Or a long time sequel, like, say, for instance, Top Gun after, you know, 30 some odd years.
Yeah, I think in regards to that, television, you have a broader story, a broader characters, because depending on how long the show ran originally, you know, you have characters that have depth. Whereas in a film, you're looking at 90 to 120 minutes of character development, unless you're working with something that has sequels. And so I think in television, I think it works better to pick up where you left off and just continue on. Whereas a movie is probably more about a remake than, or a reboot than a revival. I know Mary Poppins, then the return of Mary Poppins, which came out this year, holds the record for the longest period between an original and a sequel. But yeah, I don't see a lot of remakes in that regard in the film world of picking up and carrying on. I'm racking my brain. I guess Vacation, which I did not see, picked up with Rusty Griswold. I don't know if you saw the one with Christina Applegate and Ed Helms.
No, I didn't. Was Ed Helms playing Rusty?
I believe so.
Okay, that's great. See, yeah. I love that. From a nostalgia standpoint, and it seems like we circle back to nostalgia so much on this podcast, but I think it's important that we do so because it plays a big role in popular culture. And for me personally, I'm a big fan of that because I love these characters. When films and television series are done well, you know, the characters, you want them to live on in your mind, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you want to see them ride off into the sunset. It's why we obsess over series finales, right? Or why we get totally upset over series finales and you see, you know, people up in arms over them, because we want a series to end right and we want to have that kind of peace of mind in our own mind. And so if we come back to them, you know, 20 years later, I think it's just a really neat way to revisit a franchise versus just, you know, starting over. There's so many already expectations in place by the previous roles to put new actors in place and new situations. So I'm a fan of the continuation over a remake, no matter whether it's TV or film.
Now, I just had this thought talking about Vacation. If they would have done a sequel, which I don't think the movie did well enough that a sequel will be made, but should they have recast, if Ed Helms is playing Rusty, should they have recast him in the sequel to be someone else to play Rusty to continue that continuation of the Vacation series?
Oh boy, I don't know. yeah. I mean, when you look at the original Vacation franchise, there were several different actors playing the kids. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if from a continuation standpoint, continuity standpoint, you can't hold that as the standard. So, you know, if they wanted to keep doing, you know, Vacation franchises now, I suppose they could change actors if they wanted to.
I just think it'd be a nice little in joke to play with the series. But like I said, I don't think it's going to get a sequel. So Warner Brothers, you can just disregard my suggestion.
I think it's important too that it's almost, when you're looking at television versus film culturally, I think TV has more of an impact historically. You know, it provides social instruction to the masses. That's been its role since the 50s. And from a fan's perspective, and especially when dealing with films like Star Wars and Star Trek, I mean, we're dealing with the canon, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to be very careful in the world that you're creating and the world that your characters are going to exist in. So I almost think from a cultural standpoint, you can examine TV a little closer. And then from a fan's perspective, I think you hold films to a higher standard there when it comes to catering to the fans' expectations.
Yeah, I'm going to hijack this conversation real quick because you just brought up something that I was actually thinking about earlier today. And that is the cultural impact of, I was thinking about The Simpsons because they had a bit on a recent episode about, it was a hockey reference or hockey joke that I wanted to talk to Mike DeKalb, who appears here on the Wonder Why series and has a blog called Hockey Transplant. And I wanted to talk to him. And normally, like 20 years ago, we would have already mentioned this because we would have both have watched The Simpsons. Whereas now he doesn't watch it as much. And a lot of people that I know don't watch The Simpsons weekly or as religiously as they used to. And I think that is something with television in general, is that there are so many options. And right now it just seems like Game of Thrones, which is back and ending its final season, seems to be the go-to that everyone is watching. But I don't think we have that cultural impact with a lot of shows because we have more options now. So that everyone isn't watching the same thing like we used to.
I don't think that it's a that it happens to be that we are so divided as a nation from a cultural and political standpoint. I don't think it's a coincidence that that has happened at the same time that we're no longer having that shared cultural conscience that television has offered us through the years. So I'm 100% on board with that. I'm a believer in that. I believe in the power of television to create and maintain certain cultural standards and expectations that are just accepted by the masses, whether it's good or bad, whether it's right or wrong. I'm not pointing to any one thing. I'm just using television as a very broad spectrum here. But there was the golden era of network television through the 80s, 50s through the late 80s. Until cable came along and started eating into that, and then a satellite, and then now here we are in the era of streaming. Absolutely, we're not talking about the same things anymore. And sitcoms specifically would present these issues to us in wrapped in comedy, wrapped in a safe way for us to then talk about it the next day at the water cooler, talk about it at school. And so sitcoms are so much more than just, mindless comedy. They really did present a package of social issues for us to then take the narrative forward. And when tying it back to now reboots, I think one of the challenges of reboots in TV is that they're living now in a world that they helped create. So what I mean by that is shows like Roseanne, which gave us, new images of the lower class, or Will and Grace, which was groundbreaking in celebrating openly gay characters. And 20 years later now, what they're doing in their narratives, it's not novel anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I think what made them so unique is how groundbreaking they were and the social messages that they carried with them that, now they need to reinvent themselves to some degree while also staying true to the original characters that they brought back. So it's a big, big kind of uphill challenge for the writers to reinvent them from a narrative standpoint to keep them fresh and modern as far as what's happening culturally, but then also sticking with the original characters. So that's got to be a tricky tightrope to watch or to write.
Yeah, that's a good point that, yeah, if what was groundbreaking 20 years ago or even 10 years ago is now normal or passé. Yeah. And so I was actually thinking about like what shows I would like to see come back as a continuation, and I think one that would hit on that, and especially the way the environment is today or I don't even know what word I'm looking for. I'm just going to keep saying what I'm saying. But the show that I think would be interesting to see a 2019 version of is Family Ties. Because I think you could have it be with Alex now having his family and have his kids be the reverse of, instead of being the staunch conservative that Alex was to the hippie parents, you have the kids who are, either big Obama fans or Bernie bros, and Alex B. Keaton trying to deal with that aspect, and then see, you know, where Mallory and Nick are at. And I think it's mainly just because I want to see Scott Valentine back doing something. I think criminally his career did not pan out the way that I had hoped it would for him. And I still don't know where My Demon Lover is, on why it's not on Blu-ray.
You do see some of that, the show you just described in Last Man Standing. Hmm. But it's almost too topical and too, it doesn't get deep enough, whereas Family Ties would get deep. And so, yeah, I think that would be awesome. And I would love to flip the script there on that, to see Alex Keaton with the household of liberal children. That would be awesome.
Yeah. And I don't know, you know, because Murphy Brown came back this year, and tying this into the politics is, you know, I loved Family Ties as a kid, but when it was on, I was, I think, like between the ages of 8 and 13, 14. So the political aspect of it, I didn't really understand the depth of that debate or those characters, because I wasn't paying attention to politics. I, you know, I knew who Reagan was, I knew who Nixon was, but I didn't understand the hippie aspect of Elise and can't think of the father's name, Stephen.
Yeah.
And same way with Murphy Brown, like when it was on, I remember it being heavy on the politic front. But now when the reboot came back, it seemed to be more in your face than what I remember. And I think from my biased perspective is the political humor in a lot of shows isn't humor. It's more mean-spiritedness to push one side or the other.
Yeah, that's what I get out of Last Man Standing, is just Tim Allen taking pot shots at liberals. And yeah, so there's not a lot of depth there. It's just it's done for a cheap laugh, but there's no depth. You know, going along the lines of what you said, you know, you say that would be good to, given the current political climate that we're dealing with, to get a show like that, to get people talking about that. My show that I would want to bring back in that same vein would be Different Strokes. Because we're also dealing with we're also in a cultural climate where we're not real understanding of each other's differences all the time, from a racial standpoint, from a religious standpoint, from a political standpoint. And so Different Strokes would just give you the avenue to address all of those with a very broad stroke, and then each episode could deal with different, you know, aspects depending on how it was written. So that would be a really cool show to bring back. I think that would be a healthy for our society right now.
Now, would you redo the classic bicycle shop owner episode?
You'll have to refresh memory on the bicycle shop episode.
That's the one with Mr. Carlson from WKRP. He ran a bicycle shop and invited Dudley and Arnold back to his place. And then I think Arnold left, but he got Dudley drugged up and took nude photos of him. And turned out that he was a child molester or pedophile.
I vaguely remember the bicycle shop, but I don't remember that episode specifically. Wow. So that's, well, it could be now about, you know, sexting.
Yeah.
So it would absolutely need to be addressed. Sure.
Yeah, and I think that's something that, again, as a kid, really wasn't paying attention to, but going back and watching these shows now, it's some of the topics that were discussed in, you know, late 70s, early 80s that aren't mentioned today. Or because I remember also there was an episode of Too Close for Comfort where Jim J. Bullock's character is raped by two women. And I just had another example and I can't think of it. But, you know, we had these very serious episodes, Growing Pains. Matthew Perry guest starred and, you know, was involved in a drunk driving accident. But it seemed like there was a lot more. You know, I think that when we look back at this time with the rose-colored glasses, we look at thinking that it was a simpler time, or a, you know, compared to what is on television now, we think television was a lot cleaner, if you will. But there was a lot of heavy stuff going on back then.
Yeah, 70s film kind of had that gritty realism movement that then I think TV jumped on with, you know, bringing some shows like Good Times And then, but then it also made its way into the middle class with, like you said, Family Ties, Too Close for Comfort, some other middle class sitcoms that are, you know, that kind of fall right in the middle and hit the widest audience, but yet dealt with those serious, you know, more realist issues that you weren't used to, you know, you just weren't used to seeing. So yeah, it was, and it's missing. I think it's from a lot of television today, it's missing. And I think that's one of the reasons why some of these reboots are very welcome.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, came to my mind. The difference between then and now too is I remember an episode of Growing Pains where Mike and Boner went to a party and drugs were being passed around. And at the end of the episode, Kirk Cameron like stopped, broke the fourth wall and was talking to the audience about, like, you know, how drugs aren't cool. And then you have the Saved by the Bell episode where they kind of did the same thing. But now it seems like, you know, drugs are kind of glorified in a lot of programming. And I, you know, you can look at the social changes between the 80s and now and see how people's opinions have changed. But yeah, just it seems like I think we're kind of getting a little off topic here discussing more the seriousness of 80s comedy. But yeah, that's the thing.
It ties in though with what you said earlier about losing that shared consciousness, because we're no longer all watching the same thing. And so, you know, the messaging, the social instruction is lost. And as we're seeing right now, I don't think that as a society as a whole, we're mature enough to make up our own minds. We need someone to help guide us. And who, you know, we didn't realize that it was, you know, our mass media all along that at least helped us in getting the conversation started. And we don't know how to do that as a society right now. We don't know how to start the conversation, even though we have more means than ever with social media and our technology at our fingertips to have a conversation with anyone at any time. We don't know how to do it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, you know, we need some of those issues brought back in our mass media to get us talking again. But like you said, we're so fractured as an audience that, hey, did you see this? No, not yet. It's in my queue. I'll get to it. Whatever. So, oh, well, I wanted to talk to you about this, but I'll wait till you see the episode, and then you miss the chance.
Exactly. And like you said, you have not seen Endgame yet, so I can't discuss how awesome or not awesome that movie was, depending on...
Exactly.
Yes. But yeah, I did. And I think it is sad that, like you said, we have so many means of communication, but we don't know how to communicate with each other. It, you know, with social media, it's more about shouting down difference of opinions than actually opening up honest dialogue. And I've seen a quote a few times over the last couple of years where it said, you know, we were always taught you never talk religion or politics, and so now we don't know how to talk about them. And instead, it should have been said, you know, you discuss them in a polite manner where you're open to ideas. But
yeah, that's a good point. We purposely avoided those topics for so long, and now without any type of guidance, we're certainly lost on how to even broach the subject.
Yeah, and I think everyone is opinionated to a degree where, like I said, difference of opinion, even from, you know, not just political, but even little things like, say, Game of Thrones, where you're like, oh, have you watched this? No, I have no interest. Well, what do you mean you don't have an interest? Why don't you care about that? Like, there's just, you know, or music, it's the same thing. I don't think we know how to deal with someone who doesn't agree with us all the time.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened. Surely social media has played a role in it. We feel like when we put our opinion out there that we're blasting it out to the world, but really we're not. We're only sharing it with the small community that we have. And yet when we're challenged, you know, I've experienced it personally myself, so and I feel like a pretty introspective guy. But yeah, I get a little taste of that as well every now and again. Even though I love to share new ideas and I'm always open to seeing, you know, both sides or multiple sides to a story, especially as a trained journalist. I was trained to do that. But yeah, we certainly have gone awry in terms of how we communicate, our opinions, or how our opinions have somehow become fact in our own minds.
Yeah, that's true. There is no opinion. It's all fact based. Even any fact can be used to back up an opinion these days. I mean, we've discussed it several times on this series of shows, on other episodes here on Positive Cynicism, where, I mean, that was one of my goals of starting this podcast, and why I have different guest hosts every week is to facilitate that conversation, and also, like I said, try to get people with differing opinions, because the other aspect of not only being able to discuss them, but when you surround yourself with people who only agree with you, that echo chamber is not healthy either, because then you get even more insulated. And when someone does have a difference of opinion, instead of trying to understand it, it becomes so foreign to you. Like, how can you have that opinion when everyone else that I associate with has the same opinion?
Yeah. And I hate to say it, but when we get into the echo chamber, the only people that win are the people in power, the corporations, the lobbyists that are trying to write the laws, the politicians. They're the only ones that want the echo chamber. We're creating the echo chamber, but we're playing right into their hands. And we've got to break that. We've got to find new ways to open up discourse here. And hopefully, if we have to reboot every show in the history, by God, we'll do it. And this is, you asked right off the top of the program if I thought this was a fad. Well, Hollywood has certainly latched onto this premise. So this is according to IMDb. These are all projects that have either been announced or are already in production. Top Gun, All Quiet on the Western Front, The Crow, An American Werewolf in London, Dirty Dancing, Drop Dead Fred, we need that again, Fletch 1, Starship Troopers, The Neverending Story, War Games, Time Bandits, Commando, Creature from the Black Lagoon, Escape from New York, Highlander, Little Shop of Horrors, My Fair Lady, Romancing the Stone, Scarface, Short Circuit, The Bodyguard, The Wild Bunch, Weird Science, The Toxic Avenger, shout out to Troma Studios there, Gremlins 3, Logan's Run, Police Academy, Cliffhanger, Chopping Mall, Chad. They're going to remake Chopping Mall. I'm so excited about that. Day of the Dead, Firestarter, Hellraiser, Private Benjamin, I Am Legend, A Nightmare on Elm Street, The Craft, Charlie's Angels, I Know What You Did Last Summer. I stopped there. I could have gone on. And this is all, this is after the release of so many. A Star Is Born, Pet Sematary, Death Wish, all just released. Some still in theaters, I think, Pet Sematary. So this, I think, it's interesting to see where it will go. I think the only way it becomes a fad is if there's a chance of, reboot fatigue. We talked about the uniqueness of some of the shows television-wise, but same thing with a film property. If you'd love to see it come back on the big screen, whether it's a sequel or a remake, there's a uniqueness to that. But will that uniqueness go away when half the movies showing in cinemas are based on old films, And will the audience continue to show up to see rehashed or remade ideas? This might just be something that was the late teens and early 2020s fad, depending on how audiences get fatigued by it.
Yeah, I'd have to look up the box office numbers to see how well these reboots are doing. But I'm curious, in Kevin Smith, who made a movie almost 20 years ago called Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, just finished a movie called Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, which is playing off the Hollywood's reboot craze. And from what I have seen from his behind-the-scenes videos and discussions on the film, it looks to be like 90% the exact same movie, just updated. And, if this was late 90s Kevin Smith, I would say I have faith that he could do it well in a satirical manner. 2019 Kevin Smith, I'm a little hesitant. I don't know if he can get the joke, or if he will just be the joke.
Well, I hate to say it, but I think the fans will probably ultimately be the butt of the joke here, because they'll be the ones excited about a new Jay and Silent Bob film, and then they'll get they won't get what they're quite expecting. But I do like the idea of poking fun at the reboot, I must say. I do like that. But we'll see how Kevin Smith handles it.
Well, yeah, and as long as it's not the guys that did Disaster Movie and Epic Movie and all the bad parody films, if they would have just done Reboot Movie.
Have we talked about the lost art of the parody? We've got to save that for a different episode, and just that's all we discuss, because yeah, that the parody has been lost. Mm-hmm. The art of the parody is lost. Sad to see.
Yes. Yeah, I was just going back to the reboots, where I am curious, because it, the Stephen King novel turned into a movie, did so well, and part one was really good. Part two comes out this fall, but you had Pet Sematary, like you mentioned, which is still in theaters as of this recording. I am curious if this is going to be a resurgence of Stephen King reboot properties, because you mentioned Firestarter as well in that list of proposed ideas. And, you know, from like 1980 through probably like 96, 97, it seemed like there was a new Stephen King movie every year. Are we going to see new Firestarter, new Cujo, some of the books that maybe haven't been turned into movies yet? Is this going to be his resurgence as well?
Yeah, he does have, and what's, he's got a series right now too. What's the Castle Rock?
Oh yes, it's on Hulu.
Yeah. You just had The Dome that was done by, was it CBS?
CBS.
That did The Dome?
Yeah.
That was turned into a series. So yeah, I think we are in the midst of it, of the Stephen King resurgence, which is awesome. And yeah, I assume we'll start to see a lot of the original stuff remade as well. Well, The Mist was just made into a TV series as well. So yeah, we're already seeing the reboots of Stephen King. And so yeah, I imagine we'll see more of that, which is, you know, there is something to be said, because film has, there's been so many advances in technology, from special effects and visual effects and just the cameras in general, that some films, what they can do now compared, especially with like a Stephen King, where just his imagination couldn't, I think that was a big problem with a lot of his 80s films, that the filmmakers didn't, they just couldn't bring his vision to life realistically, because it was just so out there. And now they can. And they can hopefully, depending on who's doing it, you know, give it some sort of verisimilitude. So, yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to see a lot of Stephen King reboots. Bring them on. Let's see what they can do in 2019.
All right. Yeah, I'm. I mean, a big fan of his in the 80s. We'll see if we can get something as good as. Trying to think of what his really good films were, but I know everyone likes The Shining, except for Stephen King. But I was not a fan of that one.
I'd love to see The Stand made into a movie. It was made into a miniseries by ABC back in 1994. And boy, that book, I don't know if you've read The Stand. It's about 1,000 pages or 1,200 pages, so long. And that would be an interesting movie, or that could be a series as well. I could see one of the streaming services turning that into a.
Yeah, I was going to say something that long. Would it be better as a movie? Like they've taken it and chopped it into two parts, or would The Stand be better on a Netflix or Hulu? I guess if they have the partnership with King to do it there, I don't know.
Yeah, I think a series, because especially the way it was written. I mean, it was almost written in its novel form for TV, the way it cuts off its chapters with cliffhangers. Mm. And so yeah, you could certainly do an episodic series and not have to change a whole lot. So yeah, that would be cool. Right. You know what? Another really cool show to bring back. We talked about sitcoms, but I'd love to see Quantum Leap come back. And almost just from a history perspective, because, you know, we're moving away from some, you know, really important parts of history, and it's hard to capture young minds these days with all of the other things that are serving as distractions. And I think a show like Quantum Leap would be pretty cool to try to bring history to life. And it would be, you know, with current technology, it could be, you know, Al running around with his latest Apple, and every time a new Apple comes out, he's got to go get one or something, or else Sam gets stuck. They could do a lot of kitschy stuff with it, but that'd be a fun show to bring back.
Yeah. I've only seen a few episodes of that show, but yeah, I agree with you. I think, and especially based on how the show ended, you know, if Scott Bakula was up for it, he could easily just jump right back into the role.
Well, and he could be the Al.
Yeah.
And then they could bring younger guy to play Sam, which I guess same thing, kind of like just graduating to another role, still very much part of the canon, but still kind of then also handing over the reins to a more maybe age appropriate actor. Not that he couldn't pull it off, and not that a person of that age shouldn't be in that role, but just trying to think of kind of ways to capture the nuances of the original.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking, because you are familiar with how the series ended, correct?
Yes.
Okay, just playing off of that, if you don't know how Quantum Leap ends, there's a thing called Wikipedia. You can look it up, but I don't want to spoil it in case you want to go back and watch a 30-year-old series.
I should do that. Don't go to Wikipedia. Go start the series, watch it all. I think there's like 7 seasons, and then get to the end and tweet one of us and let us know what you think.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because we've sat here and we've discussed and we've brought up a lot of 80s shows. And part of that is due to us growing up in the 80s. But I was trying to think today, like, what 90s shows would be good to reboot or revive? And honestly, I couldn't really think of a good one. I don't know if you can.
Well, one of the things. Yeah, I think one of the reasons why, though, is because they're still kind of heavy in syndication or in streaming, right? I mean, Friends is now, was it Netflix that bought the rights to Friends and has the whole series up? And, Boy Meets World is easy to find. And that was just done as a reboot, speaking of 90s reboots. Family Matters might be a good one that could be redone. You know, Full House obviously is back on as Fuller House. Mm-hmm. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, I think, is too iconic and just attached to Will Smith to try to do something about that. But yeah, you're right. I think the 80s was the glory days of the sitcom era. The 90s just didn't have maybe Seinfeld and Friends were the two that were the kind of iconic.
And I think thinking about it right now, is it because those shows were too synonymous with the 90s? Whereas the 80s shows were, I think, kind of more timeless, where you could plug them in to any decade and just update some of the material to be, like we said with Family Ties, you know, you update your political leanings or references. But something like Seinfeld and Friends just seems very stuck in that moment.
Well, and also, you know, if you think back to kind of the beginning of the PC era or the politically correct era, that kind of was the 90s, wasn't it? And so I think you might have seen these shows kind of start to shy away from some of those hard-hitting topics that you mentioned from the sitcoms from the 80s. And, you know, I'm thinking of like Wings. I was a big fan of Wings, but I'm trying to think of any big issues that they ever dealt with there. And I can't think of any off the top of my head. So, you know, maybe it was just because that was the beginning of the watering down that brought us to where we are today, where it's almost more just topical humor rather than dealing with serious issues. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I've even seen, you know, online articles, whatnot recently about millennials going back and watching Friends and Seinfeld and being like offended by them and not getting the humor that was intended in the show because they're looking at it through their PC sensitive, you know, eyes of today.
Interesting. Huh?
So, as we have discussed on the show, you can't judge the past by today.
That's right.
So,
that's right.
But yeah, I'm curious. If you are listening and you have a good 90s show that you think would like to see revived, let us know. Again, at ChatSmart, at the Travis Yates. But yeah.
That'd be fun to let's get a tournament going. Let's get these out there. Let's get a sitcom tournament reboot out there and see which is the most cherished and has the most demand to bring back.
It's a good idea. That I may have to restart the Positive Cynicism blog Actually, I need to anyway, but this would be a good topic to launch it with.
Perfect.
There we go. Yeah, I think we've kind of exhausted the reboot idea, but I guess I'll ask you in the closing moments is, we've mentioned the fad aspect of this, but do you think with all the streaming platforms that we have now, and right now, you know, Disney is launching theirs in the fall of 2019. There's talks of Warner Brothers and NBC possibly launching streaming platforms, that there's just going to be so much content to fill that we're going to see more of these revivals, because it is companies will want to tread on name brand recognition as opposed to trying something new.
I do think that we're going to be seeing these for the foreseeable future until that well dries up, if it ever does. I think that you can't underestimate the power of nostalgia. And, you know, you have a ready-made audience with a lot of these shows when you bring them back. And so that certainly is one advantage, rather than starting from scratch and trying to cobble together new audiences from the get-go. So there's certainly advantages to these reboots and revivals. And like you said, there's so much content out there. There's so many options. And it's such a great time from a viewer standpoint to have so many options. But there are drawbacks, like I said, we're losing the shared experience. But then also, someone's got to be creating all this content with so many platforms to put it out on. And so these revivals and these reboots certainly offer one kind of quick way to circumvent the whole creative process and just say, hey, let's bring Wings back, either as a totally new show, but that's the premise, same airport, or let's bring the original characters back if they're out there and willing. So, yeah, I think for the foreseeable future, reboots and remakes will be around.
Yeah, and it is, from a worker standpoint, more content means more jobs, so that's a good thing. But from a viewer standpoint, more shows means viewer fatigue. And like I said, trying to find the things that everyone will watch and share that experience and communicate about.
Absolutely.
See? All right, Travis, do you have anything to plug before we wrap this up?
No, nothing to plug right now. As I said, I'm just coming to the end of the semester here, so hopefully over the summer I'll get some projects going.
All right. And you will watch Cobra Kai.
I will.
And then we'll do a whole like 3-hour episode just about Cobra Kai, because
I'll be ready.
It is that good. Not to overhype, not to get your expectations too high, but if there's any justice in the world, William Zabka will be walking home with an Emmy next year.
Yes. Or this year. Awesome. Love Billy Zabka.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, Zabka's awesome. That's going to do it for
my expectations are as high as a crane kick. I just want to throw that out there before we wrap it up. Oh. So it's too late. They're already set super, super high.
Hey, I was going to say, a 1984 crane kick or a 2019 crane kick? Because, you know, the hips are a little wobbly these days.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Positive Cynicism. Again, be sure to check out all the shows here on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network. You can check them out at jitterymonkey.com or on your favorite podcasting devices, which you're probably listening to this podcast on one right now. And as always, question everything. And in these times, I do sincerely mean that. Question everything you see and read and hear and everything. And also, go out and do something positive.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.